This is Greg Olson, here to tell you about my new podcast, TE1. On the show, I had a chance to talk to my fellow tight ends who have revolutionized the position from an extra lineman to a dual threat superstar. And just like my guests have changed the game, this year, NFLSundayTicket.tv is revolutionizing your NFL viewing experience. Stream all the live out-of-market NFL games every Sunday on your favorite devices and never miss a moment from your favorite players. Visit NFLSundayTicket.tv and use the promo code GREG88 at checkout and get 15% off your subscription. That's NFLSundayTicket.tv and the promo code GREG88. Subscribe to TE1 and get NFLSundayTicket.tv, an unmatched dual threat.
Welcome once again, everybody, to a Sopranos podcast. As always, my name is Joe Spellman, and this is
David Fiedernick,
and this is
Paul Gullius,
and we're talking season 3, episode 3, Fortunate Son, with our good buddy here, actor, comedian, chef, Mike. Gill, baby.
Still.
Hello.
Welcome.
Mike.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
It's lovely to have you here.
Being on it. And real fast, what is the celebrity cameo in this episode?
Oh,
you
yes.
know, Mike?
It's the guy from Mad TV. He is Stuart.
What?
The guy plays Stewart.
I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. That's not what I was
thinking.
Isn't he?
I thought he's like helping move Svetlana out of Tony's mom's.
I know you're talking about that guy.
The guy who played Stewart is in an episode.
He is.
Like, is that not him there?
Yeah, but not
that's
this
not,
episode.
That's not him.
Not a Mad TV crossover.
Think TMZ-esque. Somebody
I wouldn't normally recognize him.
TMZ, but pink.
Oh, at the pink concert? Like, no, wait, no.
At the concert.
Jewel concert.
Yeah,
who's at the? He's the one with the money who's like, you know who you're robbing? Like, this is a charity.
Oh, who is that? Perez Hilton?
Yep.
Yes.
Oh, you got it? Yes. You got it?
Is it really Perez Hilton?
Yes. It is, yeah.
Wow. How do you get that?
His agent submitted him probably, and he.
Oh man!
And he was like, "Oh, I'd rather try to ruin people's lives instead of this. This sucks."
He's like,
"I can
make
way more money ruining celebrities' lives."
Yeah. Why don't we get like $800 for a little co-star? I want to ruin some lives.
Yeah. All this weighing around on set sucks. I'd rather be in my little hole all day and fucking drag people who I don't know.
I mean, is he even relevant? Do people still like go to PerezHilton.com for their celebrity news?
I think he does something. I don't know what he
is
does.
Is there any gossip? I don't know if celebrity has much pull anymore in this post-apocalyptic world.
Nobody cares.
That's a good point.
I mean, at least the people who matter don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no more gossip. No, it's all done.
Yeah.
Of course, you guys have probably talked about the Lin-Manuel Miranda cameo.
Several times.
We quote him all the time.
Yeah. We haven't gotten to that episode yet, but I'm sure we mentioned it. I mean, that's still like my favorite line delivery ever is when Tony like asks him like, "Oh, we thought this was the hotel with the, you know, from whatever." And Lin-Manuel's like, "I think, I don't know." And then Tony goes, "Fucking guy."
Yeah.
Fucking guy.
That's the best.
Yes, you can use that so often in your day-to-day life. Just fucking guy.
Fucking guy.
Fucking guy.
Yeah, Lin in that episode, that moment reminds me of like the old David Letterman like dumb guy where you'd be like,
yeah.
I don't know.
Right. Yeah.
Great use of his talents.
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's dive into the app here. Fortunate Son, season 3, episode 3. Originally aired March 11th, 2001. You have any idea what you were doing March 11th, 2001?
March 11th, 2001.
Yeah.
Well, that was a That was a Sunday.
Yes, it was. Yeah. Oh, wow. From memory. Wow.
What was I doing? I was in my freshman year of high school.
Spellman is actually trying to think about what he was doing that day.
Yeah.
Actually trying to figure that out.
Probably. Good luck. Probably going to class.
Ooh, good.
Oh,
one.
Cool. What nice. A good story.
On a Sunday. Okay. Anyway,
let's give our viewers the rundown, a little refresher in case you haven't seen it in 20 years. This is the episode where Chris finally gets made. But he gets off to a little bit of a rocky start. We have a potential new source.
He said, meet me at Modell's in half an hour.
We'll get to Modell's. A potential new source of Tony's panic attacks is revealed. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And AJ begins his football career, which doesn't go on too long. But yeah, first of all, besides the Perez Hilton stuff, can you guys name the three characters who make their first appearances in this episode? There's three.
Benny, wow. Fazio.
Benny Fazio is one, played by Max Casella. Doogie Howser alum.
Carmine?
Oh, is that his first? This is first episode?
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. With the pizza joint and everything?
Yep, yep,
wow.
Yep. We got two more.
Carmine?
Dino Zarelli?
No, not
nope.
Carmine.
Oh, it might have been Dino. No, Dino. I don't know. It might have been Dino.
Carmine Sr.?
Carmine
Sr. Eugene? Have we seen Eugene?
Yeah. You guys got it. You guys got
Wait,
it.
Who's Eugene?
He's the guy that eventually hangs himself in season six. Members only.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So he's getting made with Chris.
Yeah.
The two he's of them like are both in the same class.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
The class of 2001.
Class of 2001. Yeah.
Made men.
Robert, played by Robert Funaro, who was like a childhood friend of James Gandolfini.
Oh, really?
Who I just found out was originally, he was actually cast as Ralphie.
What?
Really?
Really?
And then David Chase was like, not a good fit. And then they kept him on as like Eugene. And then ultimately, like, you know, he gets to prove his acting chops like later on in the season and stuff. Yeah. But
his character is such a come from out of nowhere dramatic arc towards the end there, which is so wonderful. It's just absolutely wonderful.
Yeah. I'm very glad that they gave like Robert Funaro an episode to sort of send him off because I think he is a good actor. And he didn't have a ton to do for the bulk of the series, but
smashes a bottle on little Paulie's head.
I mean,
this is true.
What'd you say?
Yeah, well. This is his first ep. So this ep, appropriately titled Fortunate Son, we focus on a lot of characters who are sons in name or in actuality. Chris, AJ, Jackie, and Tony are our fortunate, or I guess some would say unfortunate sons. Mm-hmm. It starts out with Chris getting the call to dress sharp, meet Paulie at Modell's because he's getting made. Do you guys remember Modell's?
Gotta go to Mo's.
Dude, I love gotta go to Mo's. I kind of miss like a time in my life when I would go buy like a Yankees like jersey at Modell's.
Dude,
like,
wasn't there one in like Herald Square, like 34th Street?
Well, I would go to the one on like 87th and 2nd or 3rd on 3rd on the Upper East Side.
Yeah, but I would go to one. There was one near Macy's, I think, on 34th Street, like in Herald Square, that I would go to all the time.
Cool.
What happened to Modell's?
I think it's gone,
That's where you guys got all your sportswear 20 years ago.
I was just going through like old college shit. I was back home, and I definitely still had my Modell's card in my like pile of shit.
You know, I love Modell's.
Cool. Yeah.
Gotta go to
Mo's.
Yeah, we know it.
Great for our listeners.
I hope you've all skipped ahead at least 30 seconds.
It's like a medium box store, Modell's. It was like not a big box store, but not a boutique.
Right.
That's a great way to describe it. But so this is our first glimpse at a making ceremony in the Sopranos. And
before we get there, you notice how Adriana is like all nervous for him, and Christopher's like, "Hey, you watch too many movies, like Goodfellas."
Oh yeah,
which he is
both
referencing, which he's actually in.
Right. Yeah.
He's in Goodfellas.
Oh,
yeah.
Right. I think
he's the Shine Box kid.
Right.
Totally.
Yeah.
I think what they're both remembering there is Tommy DeVito getting whacked when he was supposed to be in Goodfellas. Right.
Right.
Yeah. And then Tony references it too. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
They were, Yeah. You watch too many movies.
Right. You were sitting on one ass cheek the entire ride over.
Great delivery.
Really well done by Stevie Van Zandt there. But so, like, how did you guys, like, imagine, like, making Ceremonies before you saw this? And did this live up to it?
I don't know if I envisioned one. I didn't really, like, I didn't know there was, like, an actual ceremony.
Because this looks, like, pretty, like, low budge.
Like, it's very, like, dreary and...
It's
like
a basement someone's somewhere, basement. Right? Yeah.
Is it the basement of the house that in season six when they're on the land, they're trying to, like, they have to go to the safe house?
Oh, you know what?
Is that the same house? Is it the same house?
I never made that connection, and they probably didn't know as they wrote it, but I like that. I think
that would make sense. That would make sense.
There's something so interesting about how many of the locations end up being old, sad houses from the generation before. That's very, you know, part of the theme of just,
I think,
like,
that says a little something, yeah.
Yeah, the things that were handed from the past.
Right.
Yep.
But yeah, I never pictured, like, a making ceremony. If anything, I thought they did a nice job of, like, okay, in real life, it's not going to be well lit. Like, they did a nice job of being like, it's not like they're bringing Fresnel lights.
It's very dark.
Or, like, a nice LED light system or anything. It's just going to be, like, turning a couple bulbs. It's, like, really shittily lit.
Well, we have Bacala, like, fidgeting with the like, light. He's like,
gets roasted.
Figure it out. Like, yeah. And then of course we see, like, I guess it was like a raven or a crow or some sort of blackbird in the window.
Three-eyed raven.
Three-eyed raven, little crossover with Game of Thrones. But why do you guys think they threw in this strange bird looking over the making ceremony? Was it pure, like, foreshadowing, or are they playing into something else here with this episode?
I think
well, because I mean obviously both with, like, Chris cat, and, like... and Eugene suffer, like, terrible fates, right?
Right.
Chris is ultimately murdered by Tony and Eugene hangs himself, but they probably didn't know that when they were writing this. So I'm just wondering, like, am I missing, like, what is like the writing device that they're using here by throwing the bird in the window, like, for this episode?
The point of the episode is, like you said, like, these are unfortunate sons, and the rest of the episode, Christopher is, like, completely behind, like, he points out the bird, like, was fucking cursing him,
right?
You know, so I wouldn't read too deep into it,
yeah.
Unless it's an homage to something that we don't realize, but it just feels like. And, like, throughout the series, there's, like, all that shit, like with, like, when he dies, like, Paulie thinking he's the cat and all that shit, you know?
A lot of superstition built into, like, the DNA of the show, for sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And, I mean, the act itself that they're doing is a very superstitious act. They're burning the prayer card. They're joining, like, a family that's, like, a created family. They're making a vow. All those things are, like, in essence, very magical thinking, very superstitious.
Yep.
And I know that this came out 4 years or 5 years before The Departed, but it does remind me of the very end of The Departed, where, like, a rat comes in and just kind of, like, looks, even though that was more of it looking at the audience than actually looking at one of the characters.
Breaking the fourth wall.
And I wonder if, like, Christopher had, you know, like, just with Adriana, she was, like, nervous about, like, what you're doing. This is, like, you know, they obviously good fellows was on their mind, but you know, they also were nervous in their gut because, like, he's joining the fucking mafia. Yeah, like, like, it's okay to be nervous. This is, like, a correct time to be nervous. And he probably is nervous too. So it's like, you start looking for these signs to, you know, I'm not nervous because I'm joining the mafia. I'm nervous because this fucking bird was staring at me, you know?
Right. Yeah. I was paying, like, particular attention to, like, the whole process of it, like the burning of the card and the picking of the pinprick on the finger and this and that, because later, like, Phil Leotardo is like, oh, they're making ceremonies all fucked up over there. There's no gun and sword on the table or this and that. He's like, it either means something or it doesn't. And it's just, like, so arbitrary to me, like, what holds meaning within that context and what doesn't.
But, he's like, the way they do it in Jersey.
Right, exactly. So
Yeah. Yeah, you get picked up at Modell's, then, you know.
I can't believe they pick them up at Modell's. You're supposed to go to Bob's.
Yeah, you're supposed to go to Modell's. Gotta go to Modell's.
Sporting Goods. I wonder.
Go ahead.
If that was like, if there was audience complaints about, because I feel like they, Chase does a really nice job of sort of peppering in like the voice of the critic, you know, right. Especially when it comes to like the Italian American stuff. Mm-hmm. So it was, I feel as though he must have heard that from people at some point where it's like, you didn't even put a sword and a gun on the table. What are you doing? Is that real? That's just TV.
Well, it's the same thing as like the Don doesn't wear shorts, you know, like a lion.
Well, that was a real thing that somebody told Gandolfini. Don doesn't wear shorts.
An actual mob boss said that to him, like on the street.
That's great,
amazing. But I guess this was all to kick off the storyline of how Chris is going to have such hard time, like kicking up his minimum 6 G's every week for Pauly, and which sort of kicks off the storyline of like Chris versus Pauly, like their feud that lasts like through the end of the series.
Yeah.
I just want, you guys have like favorite Chris Pauly moments? I mean, like where they butt heads, like obviously Pine Barrens. I mean,
obviously
is like
Pine Barrens.
One,
but... Obviously like when the, when they kill the fucking waiter in AC.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it like brings them closer again.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bonding over
that moment where they're recounting the story. They're recounting the Pine Barrens story at the Bing, and that just like sets everything. I guess, is that the final? Is that Chris's last episode?
No, I want to say that's like season 5 sometime.
And it like sets things off again. I thought it was such a good example. Like,
and Vito's like, oh, you didn't tell me that.
Right.
Yeah. Tell me that.
Like they're different retellings of it. Like they've gone in different directions here.
The visual of like Tony Sirico like laughing and then like immediately getting stone faced and pissed off is like always gold.
Yeah.
Yes. Always gold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just the dour.
Just the and like, so, sourpuss.
So right from there we go into like, I guess it's some sort of like after party like of a making ceremony where they have like dudes from New York and stuff, and this is the first time we meet.
Great deli spread. A lot of like, so much eating in this episode. Like more so than
there is so much eating. There's so much
food. Tony's eating like a million times. He eats at death ceremony. He has 2 different dinners at home. He eats twice at Vesuvio.
Goes to Stewart's for dogs.
He goes to Stewart's for the dogs.
Oh
like,
man, Stewart's
eating the fucking chips on the couch when he's like watching football with AJ. Just like so much fucking eating. Oh, eats the gabagool like at Olivia's house. Like
runs in the family because. Janice has like every snack imaginable to man like out on the coffee table when she's like chilling at the house
drinking a Colt 45 like in the morning
at 10 in the morning. She already had one because one is on the table and then she's got one in her hand. I'm like, Jesus Christ.
And then the whole psychological bomb of the actual, you know, prime rib.
Yeah,
right. Like that's the thing that caused we find out that it's also genetic, but like really got kicked off Tony's panic attacks.
Oh, neat. It looks incredible though. Like art department, it once again just crushed that roast.
But also the sound effect when Livia's like cutting the meat cutting is the actually is really gross to me. So
they did a nice job of taking what should be a beautiful cut of meat, and it is just like objectively beautiful, and making it make you feel sick about it because it's like you're picturing it through the lens of a 12-year-old kid,
right?
Or whatever, however old he is there.
Tony's also in this episode related to food. His great fork acting.
Oh yeah,
isn't this thing?
Oh, with
Jackie Jr.
This is a thing on the internet, right? Isn't it on Reddit, Circle Jerk, Sopranos? Like, there's like a lot of scenes where like Gandolfini's like using a fork, like he's acting with the fork. It's like it's genius, really. It's like amazing.
I think this is the only time we actually get like the ding 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 ding, like him like trying to get somebody's attention with a fork. Like that's maybe a little overstepping on his part, but
tapping the plate with the fork to get Jackie Jr. Great.
But I want to go back to that after party where we first meet Carmine Sr. Because he starts talking about like, hey, there's no stigmata these days. Like he knows about like Tony's he knows about Tony's whole issue with his panic attacks, which he calls spells. A little shout out for you.
Yeah, shout out to me. Thank you. Thank you, Carmine. Thank you for saying my name.
And he's like, hey, you know, be a better friend to yourself, which I thought was like incredibly like progressive thinking for this like artifact of a certain time. Do you guys buy that, like, this sort of guy, like, it would actually have this line of thinking or this attitude?
Well, you know, his son ends up being kind of a softy, ultimately, right? Like, his son, Carmine Jr., can't quite pull the trigger on the things that he needs to in order to, like, you know, obviously later stop Phil Leotardo and, and keep the peace. So I guess it would kind of make sense that his father would be a little bit of, like, a little bit more open to, you know, the human psychological processes than maybe some of these other
and
guys
he are. He even says, like, go ahead, Spells.
He also, he also says, you know, like, he pontificates so much, like, he's very intelligent, Carmine Jr., but he's not. Clearly, his father, like, told him, like, how smart he was all the time and shit.
Yeah.
Clearly, like just coddled him and
What is that? So that's a real mob guy, right? The guy who plays Carmine Sr.
No,
he's an actor.
No, Green Book. Based on him, right?
Yes.
Right. Okay.
So he had some, like, mob.
So he had mob ties. Yeah.
Sort of.
Yeah, right? But I don't think he was, like, in the mob.
Right. But he was
just,
like,
a driver.
He played the driver character.
He's Italian.
He used to work at the Copacabana, that's in the movie.
Right.
Then he drove that guy around. but, like, made connections in Hollywood and stuff, and what's his name? I forget.
Tony Lip.
Oh yeah, Tony Lip.
Tony Lip.
R.I.P.
Yeah. Perfect name for that guy.
There's certain just like old school Italian guys who they were like, never had an acting lesson in your life. Fine. Just come in and be yourself. and it worked out.
Does not matter.
That shit is almost always good. Like, fucking David Simon does that shit all the time in his shows. And it's like,
well, it's amazing what David Simon did. I would say David Simon had more success than David Chase in that field.
Yes. But it helps create an authenticity as opposed to somebody who you're like, I can hear this person coming into the room to read for this part.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Yeah. It's like recently, like 2-3 years ago, the Florida Project. Did you ever see that? They cast a bunch of people out of, like, Orlando. And it's wonderful that if anyone cares that it was robbed, it should have been nominated for Best Picture.
Oh, I agree. Right?
I'm still fighting for that fight, but no one cares.
Yeah, man. You've been protesting that on the streets, like, with, like, Black Lives Matter. You're just like, Florida Project needs an Oscar. It's kind of inappropriate.
Well, you know, it gets me into the streets, and that's the first step.
It's the most important part.
And then I can, you know, do other stuff. I just need to get out of the street. I need to get out the door. The Florida Project gets me out the door.
Whatever motivates
you. You have to keep explaining to people what the Florida Project is, which has to be so annoying.
The guy made Tangerine. He made another film called The Florida. You know, Willem Dafoe.
Like, is it to get people out to vote in Florida? No, the Florida Project
is where they don't allow felons to vote, right? Is that right?
No. It's about a motor lodge motel and everyone who lives there.
Can you put your mask back on, man?
You're talking real close to me.
I'm more than 6 feet.
So then we have Tony's sort of, like, surrogate son here in Jackie Jr., who I believe he's Jackie Jr.'s godfather. I kind of remember him saying that, but I don't know.
Yeah.
But so he sort of, like, is a little bit on the hook to look out for this kid in some way. But if you're, so they have the sit down meeting, I think at Vesuvio's, and Tony's just like, look, you'd be a shithead to believe me that when I tell you, I didn't whack your Uncle Richie, but I didn't. If you're Jackie Jr., how would you guys have handled this moment? Would you have, like, gone along with Tony or what?
I would have punched him.
I mean, he doesn't at first. I would have taken his fork and fucking tapped it.
Oh, dude, you're going to do the fork tap back at Tony, man?
Yeah.
Come on.
You got it. Fork tap back on him.
Yeah, you got to fight fire with fire.
Do you think that I mean in that situation, I don't know, because I guess he and his uncle were pretty close, at least that's what they're like, I don't know if we ever really saw that, did we? But
I think so. At the end of season two, we did see Jackie Jr. come around, like, the final couple episodes.
But
Richie had been in jail for how many years, right? For most of Jackie's life, Jackie Jr.'s life. So
10 years, right? He was away
10 years. Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds
so,
right. Yeah,
that's not
Dan Castellaneta, is it? It looks like
the guy who plays.
Oh, what's his name? Yeah. What's the actor's name?
Who? David Provol.
Okay. It looks like the guy who plays Homer Simpson.
Yeah, does, yeah.
I'm like,
I've never heard that before.
Yeah, Richie Aprile was the voice of Homer Simpson. Yeah.
He's like,
that would be great.
Well, like, do you think Jackie Jr. is smart enough to know to see through the sort of like lawyer-esque, you know, Tony's like, I know you think I did it. Of course I didn't, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, well, yeah, his fucking sister did, right. You know? And even if a mob boss told me that, like, I didn't kill your dad, I'd be like, yeah, you probably had a goon do it. You know, it's so like letter of the law true. Like, right. I didn't trigger. You're like, yeah, I didn't think you did. But yeah.
But I guess Jackie Jr. Was never proven to be the smartest of the bunch. No. So I buy that he's like easily manipulated by Tony, who of course is a little more cunning of and manipulative.
Great liar.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not the actor.
Everybody knows this.
But yeah, ultimately the irony is that, you know, Tony wants Jackie Jr. to go straight. He tells Chris explicitly, like, hey, make sure this kid's not getting involved. And then Chris is so fucking pressed by Paulie that he ends up in this fucking Jewel concert. Like, it's so absurd.
It's a great way to like force him to actually have to do that job, like, because it's so beneath him at this point. But he's like, it's so desperate for money. It's so perfect. The fucking scream mask, and they're like dressed in like how they think like college kids dress with like
the
shirts like wrapped around their waist and shit, like fucking Eddie Vedder.
Yeah, because they probably what? Like how old is Moltisanti in that episode? He's, you know, he probably was pushing like 40, college maybe. Age like 10 years before, like, yeah.
Right.
Like 93, 94.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, totally dressed like grungy. Like,
yeah.
Like, oh yeah, it's like you're going to a Pearl Jam concert. Like,
yeah. It'd be like us trying to dress like college kids now. Like,
right, yeah.
My shirt that just says Zoomer on it. Put the name of your generation on the shirt.
And Jackie Jr. Of course pisses himself as just the wheel man. So that's the life he's trying to dive into.
Is it me? Like when I first saw this, like I think like Jason Sorbonne acts it kind of weird because it's hard to tell at first if he's coming, like if he's turned on by the tension. Yeah. Or if he's
I'm glad that I got to rewatch this because in this COVID rewatch that I did before, I came away from this episode thinking that he was jerking off in the car. And then he was just like so nervous that he was like jerking off in the car and then was like hiding it. I didn't realize that and I didn't rewind it. I have no time to go back and watch instant replays.
Yeah, see, yeah. So I never picked up on that, and I'm usually quite attuned to who's jerking off when. But
that's true.
I always just assumed he was pissing his pants.
I thought he was jerking off too. I really did, because I thought he was like getting turned on by the you know.
And
like,
we get the insert crime of like his like crotch and stuff. Like it's just it's kind of weird. Like, do we need the insert of that? Like
that's not how you guys look like, when you guys need to pee really bad.
It's like, oh, that's where it was all happening? Did we think like maybe he had a stomach ache and we had to see his dick? Like,
it feels as though it was like written in the script, like Jackie Jr. has to pee. And then it's like they go to shoot it, not thinking that this is going to be a hard thing to show. And then it's like, oh, what is the action that we show in these frames to show that he has to pee? Like, what? It's such an internal thing. There's not a lot of like outward indicator for it.
I guess that's true.
They show him like tapping his dick, trying to put out a brush fire. You're like, that's not what you do. You just hold it. You know, if he's a little kid, you show him squirming, but like,
you know,
adults
what?
Don't do that.
I think this is the new like theory that our podcast has to push is Jackie Jr. beat off outside the Jewel concert. Because nobody's talking about it, guys, and I think it needs to be said.
Come to Doves.
Oh, come
like to Doves. C-U-M. C-U-M to Doves.
C-U-M.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey.
I knew it. I always knew it. You counted on restaurants. Now they're counting on you. And while their dining rooms may be closed, They're still open for delivery with DoorDash. DoorDash is the app that brings you the food you're craving. Oh, Madron, right to your door. Ordering is easy. Open the DoorDash app. Choose what you want to eat. Gabagool. Some fresh fish. Some nice bacala. And your food will be left safely outside your door with the new contactless delivery drop-off setting. Choose from your favorite national restaurants like Chipotle, Wendy's, and the Cheesecake Factory. Many of your favorite local restaurants are still open for delivery too. Just open the DoorDash app, select your favorite local spot, and your food is on its way. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code BLUEWIRE. That's $5 off your delivery and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code BLUEWIRE. Don't forget, that's code BLUEWIRE for $5 off your first order with DoorDash.
And then so about every other season, we get a good flashback to Tony's childhood. And this one doesn't disappoint with Mr. Satriali's pinky getting chopped off, which would have been great if they were able to cast the original little kid who played Tony in the flashbacks in season one.
I love that shot of him in the car and the game feels and the game's on in the car. It feels like fall in
oh yeah,
yes. You know, a suburb, yeah.
Frost
a New York
is on the pumpkin.
Suburb, yeah. It, yeah, it's a great shot. It's a great shot.
It's USC, University of Southern California versus Notre Dame, which USC is also then the team that Christopher thought he lost all the money on the spread.
Nice. Look at that.
This is why we have Mike still on the podcast. That's
right. Because I got your college football right here.
Mr. College Football, Mike Still.
Yeah. Although I did not pick up that I didn't realize that was actually Mr. Satriali. I just thought it was a random. Whatever his name is.
Am I wrong?
Which then brings a whole darker meaning to the.
Because he goes, we love Mr. Satriali. He's a lovely man.
Oh, yeah.
We just had to cut off his pinky because he owed us a shit ton of money. And now we get free meat forever. So
the actor that plays Tony's dad, Johnny, right?
Yep, Johnny Boy.
Yeah. Johnny Boy. He's so good at capturing kind of like that 1950s, 1960s vibe. And I can't tell if that's like... Is that film choices have made us think the 60s, like how people are in the 60s,
or was that really how it was?
It just feels very on point. Just so nice. Yeah,
I agree. They nailed it, and that actor nailed it. It's actually going to be interesting to watch.
Like someone else playing that part,
right? God, what's his name from The Walking Dead?
Norman
Reedus.
John,
not Norman Reedus.
John Bernthal.
John Bernthal. Playing Johnny Boy Soprano in the prequel. I love the guy who they have in the series, but obviously he's too old to redo this part. But
John Bernthal is very short. He's shorter than me.
Really? What?
Which is interesting. No one really knows that. Yeah, the guy's fucking short.
That's kind of shocking.
I didn't know
Hollywood's best kept secret.
I saw him in Venice. I was like, this motherfucker's 5'4". Wow. I was shocked.
Where were you in Venice? What were you doing in Venice?
I was at brunch. I was eating some brunch. I don't even know why we were there.
Oh wow,
this was a long time ago.
All right, Goyas, move us along.
So basically, this all ties back into.
I think Tony, I had eggs, and then Ashley, my wife, had
chicken eggs.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
It was 10 in the morning. I was drinking a Colt 45 Tall Boy,
eating a huge
rib roast.
I was down at Muscle Beach eating snacks and drinking Colt 45.
You know what I usually do all the time.
Saturday morning.
Typical Saturday.
But so this was all to make the connection in therapy that Tony has with meat and his parents' sexuality and his current day panic attacks. Are you guys buying this? Like, first of all, do you, like within the world of Sopranos, are you buying that Tony is having panic attacks when he is like around certain cuts of meat? Because that seems to be what they're saying here.
I mean the whole show is so much. The first time I watched it, I had not, you know, done therapy or had a counselor or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And now I've had thousands. And yeah. It's very interesting watching, like just picking up on all of this sort of like theory, the theory of the therapy, the actual sort of like practice of the therapy. Mm-hmm. I think what's interesting about this episode is that one, it's the first time that we really, really don't delve into like how the mom has affected Tony's current behavior, how Tony's mom has an effect right. behavior, but we're like looking at the dad, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
In terms of the meat, like there's a moment where Malfi says, hey, panic attacks right now, the current science says it's a three-prong approach with medicine to stop the depression, psychoanalysis and cognitive behavioral theory, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
People, like, no offense to psychoanalysis, but it really got to kind of sneak in there with like two other really effective things. No offense. Like, and what I think is very interesting is that we see at the very end AJ faint, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
From, you know, showing that it's, yeah, we can psychoanalyze things, but really it's a very physical, a genetic thing that's happening.
It's a hereditary thing, right?
Right.
It's
right,
a hereditary right. thing.
Because we've also right? heard about Johnny Boy himself having panic attacks. Hesh, Hesh in an earlier season right. mentioned that, right. That Johnny Boy passed out and hit his head on a cigarette machine.
Right.
Yeah. And they used to call him, not his spells, but little fits or whatever. Right, like right, this right. is something that's in the Soprano blood, that's in the genes.
It's the meat. I mean, I was sorry, quick. He's just eating so much meat this episode that like that's like saying like, you know, it's the whole statistical Simpson or whatever, I forget, it doesn't matter what it's called, in statistics where you're like ice cream, you know, goes up when drownings go up, and they're not correlated, not causal.
Right.
You know,
right.
Yeah. Exactly. He's always eating meat basically. So it's always right. going to seem
odds
like
are,
he's around.
Like, but like how often is Tony Soprano not around any cut of meat? Like if he's going to be around some meat when
it's specifically the Satriales meat because it happens. The gabagool, yeah. the same gabagool is that's was delivered to Olivia's, was delivered to his house. Because you right. can tell it's the same exact writing that says mm-hmm. gabagool on it, you mm-hmm. know?
Yeah.
So it's Satriales more than it is actual meat. It's right. the delivery, the Satriales delivery.
I do think there are like certain like subliminal triggers that people may have that, you know, but I don't know that, you know, Melfi ultimately says like realizing these like underlying causes of your panic attacks can help you better prepare yourself for them and avoid them. But I don't know how much this realization really does for Tony in the grand scheme of things.
It's so fascinating. I like that it starts out where Tony's just like, I'm paying you, we better get something big soon. Pay off soon. Yeah. And that's not really how therapy works, right? Like it's, you know, the self-analysis is not a thing that necessarily has tons of eureka moments where everything just like is fixed right like maybe mini ones or whatever, but like knowing that like he is getting triggered by these memories of his father, that's probably the more important thing. Whether or not it's the meat, again, that's right, very specifically Freudian psychoanalysis, which is a thing that we have pretty much moved beyond in terms of mental health and wellness and talk therapy. It's not necessarily how it, again, gets into the magical thinking of symbols, which is very interesting. If you're writing a novel, might not be the best way to figure out your own mind. No offense to the Jungians out there.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, no, actually that's an interesting connection you just made, like with these like symbols and these magical ways of thinking, like Freudian way, like theories, are they really based in science any much more than, and I could be wrong, you know, having to have a sword on the table when you get made for it to mean something. You know what I mean? It's all just sort of like conjecture and everybody's just doing their best to figure out what the fuck life is. And nobody's really got a firm grasp on any of it. So
yeah, I mean, yeah. What was so revolutionary about Freud was the idea that there, like, that maybe there are parts of the mind that can be analyzed. Like that's the revolution, right? And that's, you know, that's the direction you want to be going in when you're trying to figure out the human brain. What specifically, should we still use his method? Probably not at this point, I would say. Because it does delve into a lot of magical thinking.
He was on a lot of cocaine, much like many of our gangsters and Sopranos.
Yeah. A lot of opium, a lot of, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
end of the 19th century.
We should be doing more cocaine, yeah, for sure.
that's what I'd say to you, Spells, yeah.
Yeah.
Looking at my quarantine body, I definitely need to, like, just be shoving cocaine into my already taxed heart.
Let's do some cocaine, man.
Yeah. Disregard what Pauly says in this episode to Chris and do lots of cocaine.
But yeah, so let's just, like, to round things out here, let's talk about AJ's sort of, like, story this episode, because maybe it all, this season really focuses on AJ as a son, and this is an integral episode to that sort of story arc here. We see him, like, go up to Columbia and visit Meadow when Carm goes up there, and he's just, like, overwhelmed by the diversity and, like, how intelligent other people seem to be, you know, compared to him through his eyes. Like, he's intimidated. And ultimately, like, he at word that he's going to have more responsibility and be made defensive captain at the end of the episode, that's what causes him to have his first panic attack that we've seen, at least. So, but, like, I can't really, like, wrap my head around what they're trying to say with this specific episode with AJ. Like, is it good?
I remember, like, in the previous season, and it's brought up at dinner in this episode, that AJ says, like, I'm going to go to West Point or Harvard. And Tony's like, you might read about them, but you're not going to be going there. And Tony completely forgets that. And it's, like, stayed with AJ. He's like, I'm not good enough to go to college, basically. Like, it's like the start of, like, something that he's going to have to talk about in therapy down the road.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah. Any other thoughts on that?
No,
we good. All right. I would say
that, like, AJ is kind of the, you know, to use a Big Lebowski reference, he really is the rug that ties the whole series together. His character is so unassuming, for so long. Right. Mm-hmm. And, he and Meadow both, they're such well-written children. And, you know, the show is so much about, like, the children of what do you do for the situation you're born into, you know, Tony and Janice, and then whatever the other sister's name, they're born into a, you know, a father that's incredibly violent and, probably lies a lot, and a mom who has, you know, really intense borderline personality disorder. So what do you get? You get a son who's just, like, a very violent and not you know, he has rage problems, he has stress problems, can't deal with it. And you have a daughter who also does a lot of borderline activity that, you know, high risk behavior, falls in love very fast. She always is, like, way into a relationship really fast.
That's true.
But then is very controlling and never happy, right? So so AJ for me is the sort of, like, he's the, I don't know, I mean, I keep picturing the meat. He's like the bread that's, like, catching all the drippings, right? Like, so he's
I love that.
You know, we see these parents keep talking about how much they want to, like, raise their kids and do better by them, and they just don't. They keep failing AJ. Both Tony and Carmela fail AJ. They fail him over and over and over again.
100%.
Until at least we see when he attempts suicide that Tony's able to at least, you know, and that for me that was, like, the most emotional moment of the whole series, when he's holding his son and he's bringing him back to life. It's like, at least he can physically help him there. I AJ in this episode, he's just so unassuming most of the time. He's just really just like, I'm here. Oh, what did dad say? about your boyfriend.
Right.
And he's like, oh, right. I know what he said. You know, it's just so unassuming, right?
It's true. It's kind of like he's this blank slate and he's sort of just observing and absorbing like everything that he's, that his parents are displaying for him. And that's kind of what you are at that age, right? Like, I think Robert Eiler gets shit on a lot, but like,
especially when you're a younger sibling too. Like my family differs immensely from the Sopranos, but we had a very similar like power dynamic in our household. Older and I had an older sister who went to Yale, and I was very much like the AJ like character, like just kind of like the young guy who was catching the drippings.
Catching the drippings.
And we see, and they both like they do the sort of, you know, Meadow is like the perfect, is the really good kid, you know, or the what do they call it, like the prize child or whatever. And you see that Tony's dad, Johnny Boy, is doing that with Janice as well. Like he's always, you know, taking her out to stuff, and Tony's just like standing there cool. I thought there's a great line that Artie Bucco says when he comes over to the table, and he's just like, it's just some wonderful hand acting.
Oh
there.
My god, that little like that scene, he is doing so much of the hand gestures.
He's doing this, she does this, and he says that, you know, these kids, we create such a good life for them, you can't get them to leave, but you know what, at least we're close to them than our parents were to us.
Right. And that, like, that's a good thing, but maybe it's not so much after this fucking episode, right? So that's a line. That's why the series is so good to rewatch, because I never thought two things about that one line by Artie, that throw off line, and that sort of like sums it up, right? Like, okay, yeah, you've done pretty well for your kids. You're able to take care of them monetarily, you know, feed them, give them anything they need, but at what price? By keeping them this close, right? Like,
Like AJ, even after he, you know, he doesn't care even that much that he did well in the football game. He's like, I don't know, Dad, you want to play it? He goes, do you want to play Nintendo with me? And he's like, and Tony's like, I should throw it out the window.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, he's inviting you into his world, Tony. Let me go play fucking Nintendo 64 with your kid.
Tony's like, hey, I don't know. I'd rather go eat hot dogs.
Shove hot dogs in my face.
Stewart's is great. I would go to Stewart's all the time when I lived in North Jersey for a brief period of time.
See, when I first saw this, I was like, I only knew of the root beer. I had no clue that
The root beer is there.
So it was like A&W.
It was like A&W. They're all over Jersey.
Oh.
Right.
Me and Clemens would go all the time.
All right. So that's do we want to get into our next segment?
Is there anything else that we want to say? I guess not.
Great app. They set up so much shit in this app.
Oh, sure. I mean,
it really is. Really, it's like, it's fantastic. Sort of more or less like
Pia Costa.
Oh, yeah. We didn't even talk about Pia Costa.
Dude, how can we not touch on Pia Costa? Pia Costa alert, man.
Mike Pia Costa.
Inspired my hair.
Yeah. Pia Costa. Yeah,
Professor Polly looking like Pia Costa hard top. These days.
Pia Costa is the dad that he's in the stands with when he's watching the
slow mo shot. Yeah,
he's in the first season and he like sees him at like a gardening store or he's like he's like, oh yeah, Tony, we should get together, or Tony's like, we should get together, and he's like,
I don't even know if these kids are still close anymore.
Yeah,
it's when AJ had a beef with his son.
Yeah,
over like the shirt that got ripped. Like some middle school fight, and he knows that like his son is beefing with AJ Soprano, and he's like trying to get the fuck out of there as soon as possible at the gardening store, like to avoid Tony, because he doesn't know if Tony, and Tony's holding an axe the whole time.
Right.
We just love the guy. I mean, I think he just has a funny look.
By the way, I think we've looked him up before, but I looked him up again on IMDb. He was in these two episodes. He's in two episodes of Law and Order where he plays different people, like you do.
Really?
New York, like in the late 90s, early 2000s. And he was in an episode of SVU. And he was in some movie called No Exit, which Vinnie Pastore and Arthur Nascarella, who plays Carlo, are also in. Can't seem to find it. But
is it like a... It's not like a version of a Sartre play, is it? Or
no, Violent look at East Harlem Italian Mafia opens with the kidnapping, torture, and killing of a rival gang member and moves forward along a brutal course in its examination of two gang members as they get involved in a messed up drug deal. I love that, the little blurb here is just describing the entire plot of the movie, it seems like. But I can't seem to find where you can watch it. We can't stream it, but it was produced by a company. Not on Netflix.
Okay.
We're giving all this money to Prince Harry. We can't get No Exit on there. A brutal story of a mob killing. Come on, Netflix.
Netflix,
give
them please.
Money to the Obamas, but not to No Exit?
Yeah. Look. You'll get four plays out of this movie. I guarantee it.
It was distributed by a company called Showcase Entertainment, which is based in Calabasas. And ooh, there is an email address, Linda@showcaseentertainment.com. We have to email her and ask to buy a copy, right? Like,
dude, he went down the rabbit hole on that one.
I need to see
any production companies that are based out of Calabasas.
This production was definitely not a front for money laundering.
What was the name of the production company again?
Showcase Entertainment. I mean, it sounds like a porn company.
I've had an audition at Showcase Entertainment before.
Oh, yeah.
I had to drive out.
Calabasas. Your pants on for that audition?
Yeah, they're on like a mountain in Calabasas. It's like this weird shack on the top of a hill. Yeah, I've been there. Been there a lot of times. I go in all the time. I hate it.
Really?
Feudy's busting out the research as if this was a true crime podcast.
Dude, this is the last we see of Pia Costa. I wanted to really, truly shout him out.
You really got to milk it. Okay, what's next?
Bless him. Johnny the Nut?
Oh, should we go right into Johnny the Nut?
I think so.
Did you guys get that email?
I did.
All right, Mike.
So this is where we have a friend of the pod named Johnny the Nut Sacpino come and he has provided erotic fanfic for us to read aloud.
Yeah.
Yep.
Hey, hey. If it looks like I'm peeing.
Let's see. Dave, why don't you read Svetlana?
Great.
Mike, you can read Janice. Gullius, you can do Guy at the end.
Okay, Guy at the end. I love that.
You'll see what it is.
Okay. Did you send me an email?
I believe I did. Did
Joe Spellman, Johnny the Nut?
No. This
under,
is...
it was so for some reason it was not under important emails. it was under everything else.
It went immediately to the trash can. It went immediately to be deleted.
It was like we think this is spam, but I guess we'll put it in like the second level of stuff just because Mike
it's a virtual version of most of Johnny the Nut's pitches. Just goes immediately to the trash can.
Yeah. Okay. Are we ready? Do we have it open up?
I'm ready, yeah.
And I'm Janice.
You're Janice. Okay, I'll read the stage. As Johnny the Nut, you know, I'll read the stage. Okay, Johnny the Nut is fucking that leg. Janice is standing in the living room holding Svetlana's leg. She's waving it around.
You want your fucking leg, you Ruski bitch.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, come grab it from me, you fucking bitch.
Okay, I'll try.
Svetlana lunges for the leg and winds up falling into Janice's arms.
Wow, you smell good.
Yeah? How good do I smell, bitch?
You smell like really good borscht.
Yeah? How about you lick my pussy for this leg? My windows are wide open, by the way.
Good,
family neighborhood.
Oh. Perfect.
Cool, good.
I can do that.
Svetlana performs exceptional cunnilingus on Janice. She is nutting hard.
Oh, Svetlana, I can feel the vodka coursing through my bloodstream.
Are you Woody Allen?
It is oozing off of your tongue and into my vagina.
Yes, I drink large vodka every day.
Jesus Christ, I can't help but want to shove something inside me.
Take my leg.
Svetlana rams her leg into Janice's tight box. Oh, yeah.
I want some action too.
Alana takes the leg and rams it into herself. They're going ass to ass on the leg dildo. Ass to ass.
That character's Guy from Rec Room for a Dream.
Yeah, Guy from Rec Room for a Dream.
Guy from another movie comes in.
Johnny the Nut. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Ass to ass. The Nut and the Guy from Requiem from a Dream are in the kitchen jerking off to these two going ham on this leg dildo.
Why don't you guys join us?
And so we did. I'll tell you what, that dildo of a leg sure comes in handy.
Oh my God.
I love the Johnny the Nut line had to be written, but Johnny the Nut also is reading the stage directions.
Apparently, the narrator is just Johnny the Nut. Yeah. Not even the narrator, just the stage director.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I mean, yeah,
that's right.
I'm just keeping you guys on your toes, you know, and this script can, anything can happen.
Another masterpiece. Sure. We knew Johnny Nut was coming in at the end.
I mean, this is a fan favorite segment. I just want you, you know. Just it want is. You to be aware of that, Mike.
It was
the
at a
fans
time.
Are clamoring for it all the
it
time.
It has been
I'm
requested.
Honored
when we
that
haven't
I can do my
it.
Janice impression.
Yeah. It's great. It sounded like very Woody Allen at one point.
Very nebbishy Janice.
Janish.
Cool.
All right. Well, I'll get back to writing more.
Thank you, Johnny the Nut. Right, that
thank
was
you,
another
Johnny Nut, for coming
fantastic.
On.
Fantastic. Eventually, we're gonna like piece every like little scene that we have of a fanfic and we'll just make a full film out of it.
Yeah, they're available. I'll release them as a collection.
You oh great,
buy
two CDs on like two box set.
Oh, the wait is finally over. Football is back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Chasing it, baby, chasing it. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
You guys, should we do fucking internet? I mean, we should.
Well, right. Where'd spells go? We need spells back.
Oh, okay. Hey, spells. I'm back.
Come on back, man.
Oh, wow. You just missed Johnny the Nut again.
Oh,
you always just miss him.
How was he?
Damn. Not good. Not good.
Not really
yeah,
bad.
He never seems to be.
Yeah.
He's twisted, dude.
Always makes me a little uncomfortable. I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He has a really good understanding of female anatomy.
That he does. Yes. That he does. I know that.
Yeah.
All right.
It's like a OBGYN.
Okay.
This is right. Fucking internet. The part of our show where we look what people are saying currently on the internet about The Sopranos from Reddit or Twitter, and that's about it at this point. This one from Reddit user Simomi with two eyes on the end. Ooh. Chrissy in Fortunate Son. I find it hard to believe that Chrissy would struggle so much to pay $2,000. I mean, this is the guy who rented a studio for $300 an hour for 3 days when he was just an associate without breaking a sweat, bought a Lexus and a Mercedes, etc. Could he really be that broke? What do you guys think?
No, I don't think he's broke. He just doesn't want to give him that money.
Just doesn't want to give that much money, yeah.
And it, also, is it $6,000, yeah. Right? Or is
it's
it just
$2,000?
It's plus so, $2,000. So he came up short $2,000. Right.
$2,000 on the
he struggled
principle.
To get that. Yeah.
Right.
Here's the thing. I think he might be that broke. I don't think these guys have like their like robust savings accounts. I don't think they have delay of gratification where they can be like, oh, I really need to put some money away for the future. I think they're just fucking spending it. As
soon
as
they get
it.
That's probably true. He probably wouldn't have beating up that junkie if he had the money.
That poor junkie's like, I'm not using anymore.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't want to sell drugs. I'm not using.
I don't care if you're fucking clean, dude. Give me my fucking $300. Give a fuck.
I mean,
we got to see in the making ceremony that, you know, the pension benefits of being in the mafia, which is that, you know, no matter what, something happens to you, we take care of you. Something happens, you know, we take care of your wife. And we see how that just plays out, that these are like unfunded pensions for like the rest of the show. It's like so much that everyone's making these big promises about like caring for you, but they just don't have the business that they need to, right? Like they're doing sports booking. Like how much can you make doing that? You know?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, case in point, like look at Paulie. Like, does anybody look like more of a fucking schmo than him sleeping on the cot in the back of the like Satrials, like brushing his teeth? Like, you know what I mean?
And we see his house. Like, he's like fucking, I mean, part of it is that like, you're trying not to alert the authorities that you are sitting on a bunch of money, but, but also like, he doesn't have a house like Tony does, like not even close.
Right.
Yeah, he lives in like an apartment building, right? Like,
It looks like a condo or something.
Or, some condo. Yeah.
Yeah. These guys, like for all the stress and the fucking horrible shit they do to make their money, like, they're not living lavish lifestyles. It's kind of like, why don't you just like get a regular salary job and not deal with the stress of having to kill somebody, you know? Or, but hey,
well, life. Hey, I mean, he just got killed by Wobistix. That's all. Wobistix, you know,
they mentioned when Tony's dad is talking to him in the flashback, and he's like, "Never gamble, never gamble."
Yep.
Yeah.
I was surprised that they didn't bring that back up when they all of a sudden gave Tony a gambling problem out of nowhere in the end of season six,
which is my least favorite like plot point of the whole series.
I think a lot of people have a gripe so with forced. That storyline.
It's Chasing so it. Forced, but I mean, like the feeling I always got from Tony is that he just didn't have that much money. You know, he's putting it back out in the gardening thing out back, and you know, it just wasn't as compelling to be like, oh, he just has not been a good financial planner,
right?
You know. But yeah, it was just, I don't understand why they just gave Tony a gambling problem. Because I always thought, even from this episode, it seemed like that was one of the reasons that Tony wouldn't gamble.
He always shits was, like, on so people formative. Who gamble. He's always like, you know, putting himself above. And then suddenly in the final season, he's got this addiction and it just didn't ring true. And I think a lot of people have take issue with that one episode.
A little too contrived. Yeah.
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 He's
a glutton, but he's not a
gambler. That's for sure.
But not. Gambler.
This one from user Nouveau Riche on Reddit. This was a much Anson. Discussed topic on the Sopranos Reddit this week. People rag on AJ because he's so whiny and annoying, but AJ is just Tony without people having to respect him out of fear. What do you guys think? Tony didn't have his status. would he be more similar to AJ than not?
AJ does get respect eventually. Like, he's pouring fucking acid on kids' feet and stuff. Like, eventually, like,
true.
He's just a fucking kid at this point, and he does get the respect. Like, the whole Pia Costa like fucking first episode is like, everyone's terrified of him because of his dad, but everyone is terrified of Tony because of who his dad was. Right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, that's been passed down.
Yeah. I don't know.
Do you think that, do you think AJ got that position on the football team because he was the fortunate son? Is that
probably,
you know, because everyone knows Tony Soprano
could be.
And he's there and Tony was and cheering.
And Tony was a heralded football player in his day when he was his age. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Couldn't hurt to have like a dad in the bleachers who, has some money and could maybe, you know, fork some over for whatever the fuck the team needs, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, the coach is aware that like, oh, this mob boss and there's FBI guys there, you know? And
Totally. No, I mean, whether AJ is exactly Tony just without the respect, I mean, I have to disagree. Like, you know, even probably back in the day when Tony was AJ's age, I think he probably was a little more ambitious. It was a little more like inquisitive about the world and how things work. I mean, especially the mob stuff. Like, I think we even see it with Tony is constantly trying to learn And a lot of the times, you know, he even takes like lessons from therapy and implements them in his mob life. And I can right. never see AJ doing something like that.
No.
You know,
also like, remember when like Carmella describes like Tony when they were young, how fun he was and awesome. Right. Like right. AJ's not that way. AJ, like especially like in the later seasons, AJ is like comatose basically. Like, you right. know, like his girlfriend leaves him because like he's obviously like not a good companion.
Right.
Like yeah, he's Tony like a, at that age was supposed to be like the life of the party, you know, like. So and yeah, and Tony's so much smarter than him. Come on.
Yeah,
I always deal like with AJ. He's just like a plant that was not watered or fed or anything. You know, I mean, he's just like true. Like no one cared for him. Like no one did. They're like he's immediately there's all these expectations, but then they only come in when it's like convenient to talk to AJ and yell at him about stuff. It's like, why didn't you do this? And his answers are never, you know, he's always just like, well, I didn't know, or I don't know. You're right. Like,
right.
It's Tony and Carmella's job to raise him, but like, it's not his job to be a great fully formed person. So I do think that like Tony is very different than AJ. They're like very different, like personality types, man, right? Like, yeah. I think that like Meadow really has much more of the Tony personality.
Agreed.
AJ, honestly kind of takes after his grandmother. He's kind of like, it's quiet and sullen a little bit, and, mm-hmm. you know. I don't know if he has borderline.
New metal,
yeah.
It's a new metal.
Dude, we get the Cold Chamber sweatshirt and the Slipknot windbreaker.
Oh, the Slipknot windbreaker is like so dope.
So good. So good.
I need Mike. Do you know of this Instagram account? AJ's new metal shirts. It's incredible. It's just like. Screenshots of him wearing all of his like metal band like gear.
Oh, that's great. There's a lot.
Yeah. This had Gabagool. There's a Twitter account that lists the amount of times Gabagool is said.
Oh, it's great.
I'm so glad Gabagool was said today.
Yeah, this is a 2-episode run. A lot of Gabagool action.
Yeah, a lot of Gabagool.
What is Gabagool? I mean, obviously it's a lunch meat, but is it a spicy lunch meat or is it a...
No.
No, it's not spicy. About? It's
it's a bunch of chemicals. It's delicious.
It's
just,
it's wonderful.
All nitrates. Fat nitrates.
A lot of nitrates.
Yeah, fat nitrates.
Stuff we make gunpowder out of.
Yeah.
Where's that niter? That's different. Playing a lot of Civilization 6. I don't know.
I'll wrap it up because we covered a lot from fucking internet in our episode discussion with this one from user 425. Not a question, but a tribute to Drew. Do you guys know who Drew is? I'll tell you. We see Drew in Provilovushka living with Jan and wearing the same fast food uniform. Then we find out, unfortunate son, that this kid can go all night.
Only 19.
Drew, yes. Of course,
we
Drew.
Last episode we said we'd never hear from him again or about him, and he is mentioned.
425 says, I gotta give it up to the kid. Fucking a woman like Jan, the sister of a mob boss, and let's be frank, quite a few handfuls in multiple ways. The kid may have sounded like he was 15, but he carried it like a grizzled 40-year-old ex-con. I salute this one episode character.
That's great.
Amazing.
That's excellent. That's true, man. Like Drew, like when we get to see that brief glimpse of Janice in Seattle, is that her son? Like, you're like, what is that? And you're like, oh, it's her boyfriend.
At least.
Fiance.
Oh, gross.
At least they gave it closure, you know? At least they like.
Yeah.
Because
she was like, he called Tony's house looking for her. Yeah. And then she's like, oh, how'd he sound? And that's it. And that's like never addressed again. Now she's like full blown, I'm stealing a Russian woman's leg. And this is like, I'm going full forward in the.
Can't feel bad for the kid. He dodged probably getting killed or his life being ruined. So
he should have brought him.
He couldn't handle Janice. He really couldn't. You know.
No.
She wasn't. Yeah. She knew she wasn't going to be with him for a long time. She was just going to use him. She was just going to chew him up and spit him out. You know.
Yeah. I mean, she more or less did.
Yeah.
She more or less did.
Yeah. So. He's lucky he didn't get a gunshot to the chest.
You just imagine at like El Pollo Loco or wherever the fuck they're supposed to be working, like people that like a couple weeks later are just like, hey, man, Drew, do you know where Janice went? Like, hey, what's going on?
Drew,
like, you, I don't know, man.
You fucked
know.
Her?
You had weddings her, in a week.
Dating?
I was going to marry her on Tuesday.
Really, dude? Yeah, I mean,
he's
okay.
Like, I got the Rolling Stones tattoo on my chest, too.
I love that tattoo. Is the best character specific of like
oh,
all
yeah.
time.
Fantastic.
It's so good. It's so
just
good.
So perfectly lame.
Yeah. It's just always so heavily featured, too. No matter what she's wearing, it's like so seen so often. Like,
yeah.
It's great.
Like, never forget the corporate logo of the Rolling Stones. It's like getting like a Weezer W like on your like... ass like small of your back.
That's all I got for fucking internet. So
excellent.
Right up, guys.
Mike, thank you so much for coming on. This was too fun. We could have gone for much longer.
Thank you for bringing me into this great episode. It really I love that it didn't end with the song Fortunate Song. It ends with like a song, an old song about getting money.
Yeah,
right. That's right.
Getting paid.
And
good shakeout.
And I'm not wrong, right? Like that, like Fortunate Son does appear in the series, does it not?
I don't know.
The scene in Vietnam when they're
Uncle June's fighting in Vietnam. Yeah,
he's like, well, yeah, welcome to the platoon, boy.
You know, from
a pack of cigarettes.
Yeah. Mike, thank you so much. Is there anything you'd like to plug?
No, nothing. I got nothing to plug.
Perfect. Perfect. Perfect.
I hope Hollywood doesn't die.
Perfect.
I plug content in general.
Yeah.
Yep.
Just keep watching stuff, guys.
Yeah. Please keep watching stuff.
The consumer is Christopher's fist, and anti-Hollywood is Lauren Bacall's face, and just consumers keep consuming those movies, those TV shows, please.
Great episode, too.
As always, listeners, you can hit us up with any questions, comments, concerns, things you like, things you don't like, at osopranospod@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at osopranospod. Leave us a 5-star review, even if you hate us, as usual. Oh!
Oh!
Oh!